Bay Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou, joined this morning by our live blog director, Jamie Jors. We're talking some Packers football, like always. The different part is that it's now late March, and our attention is turning to the NFL draft. To do that, we have a guest joining us, not right now at the opening of the show, actually at 9 o'clock a.m. Central Time. You're going to have to wait for it for today. Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com and Bleacher Report, one of their featured columnists, NFL draft columnists, will be joining us. He does every year here at Railbird Central. I get him on about once a year prior to the draft. Sigmund's got some great football knowledge that I love for him to pass along here on the show. So we'll be talking to him at about 9 a.m. Central Time. So we're going to talk Packers for a little while first. And thank you, the listener, for joining us this morning. If you want to join our conversation, by all means, feel free to use our live blog. Comments are being approved by Jamie Jors. Use our Twitter widget underneath the broadcast player. And if you want, you can call into the show. It's up on the screen, 608-403-5255. But, you know, let's start today with a topic that happened since the last time we had this show. We had the show Monday morning. It's now Wednesday. And after the show Monday, the Packers, I don't want to say made a move, but if you remember back 2 days ago, the topic du jour was tight end JerMichael Finley. And it was kind of confusing a little bit, I think, to maybe some fans out there who didn't pay real close attention to what was going on. You know, why all this news about JerMichael Finley? Well, basically, the status quo just happened. The Packers honored his contract as you know, it was laid out. So really, nothing changed with JerMichael Finley. It's just that he had a roster bonus in his contract. If he was on the Packers roster on the 15th day of the league year, he would be due a $3 million bonus. You know, it is notable that that is a rather large roster bonus. Not many players have them that size, that large of a number. You know, $3 million, you know, so the plenty have them, you know, worth tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars, more likely. But, so it is big. And basically, all that happened was if the Packers were going to cut JerMichael Finley or were going to trade him, it was going to come before he got his roster bonus. So it was a deadline of sorts, you know, not really that the Packers had to do anything. They just chose not to do anything and pay his rather large roster bonus, basically ensuring now that he's going to be with the team for 2013. You know, what you can read into that is saying the Packers, okay, they just paid him $3 million. They're not now going to trade him away or cut him, you know, after paying him $3 million. You know, obviously, if you're going to pay him $3 million, you're not going to cut him now. So that's how it all worked out. So he's going to be with the team in 2013. I will say this, though, and I think this is interesting. And it might be a little bit far-fetched, but, you know, that's what Railbird Central is for. You know, I don't even know if it's that far-fetched, but, you know, there's very rarely in the NFL do in-season trades happen. You know, it's a common occurrence in a thing like baseball. You know, if you follow Major League Baseball, trades occur a lot in baseball, and the trading deadline in baseball gets a lot of attention, because I mean, there's not a lot of, you know, in-depth strategy in baseball that there is in football. Not to say there isn't, you know, strategy in baseball, but it's things that can be picked up along the way in baseball. You know, things that you can talk about before a game, and you have in between innings to talk to your coaches. There's plenty of time in baseball, but that's why in-season trades don't happen in football, because you have to have such a knowledge base before the season begins. You got to practice a ton. You got to know your X's and O's. You got to know your offensive and defensive schemes and philosophies. You know, that's why in-season trades don't happen. But once in a while, they do. You know, notably, the Packers pursued running back Marshawn Lynch a few years ago. Remember, 2 years ago, they pursued him. It didn't happen, but he ended up being traded in-season to the Seattle Seahawks, as you might remember. And anyway, I think it's possible, if there was ever an opportunity for a player to be traded in season, it could be JerMichael Finley at mid-year. And you know, that those hopes might rest upon the Packers actually drafting a tight end. You know, if they go out on a limb and they do take a tight end in the first or second round, well, then they can maybe afford to part ways with JerMichael Finley. And they just might find a suitor out there who will say, we could use a big athletic tight end. JerMichael Finley is maybe the missing piece for us. And the Packers will be like, okay, we got a young rookie tight end. We can now afford to lose JerMichael Finley, who's probably going to leave in the offseason anyway. You know, what's interesting about JerMichael Finley now is that he only has 1 year left on his contract. It is becoming very, very hard for me to see JerMichael Finley in Green Bay beyond 2013, no matter what happens. You know, I think, you know, it doesn't even depend upon what his year is like. In fact, if JerMichael Finley has a good year, it's probably even more likely he'll leave Green Bay. You know, it's not going to be this case where the Packers will, if he has a good year, they'll be motivated to sign him. It's probably a case where if JerMichael Finley has a good year in 2013, he's going to want to test free agency, and the Packers aren't going to want to have to pay what it's going to take to keep him in Green Bay. It's funny, like, if JerMichael Finley bombs in 2013 as a terrible season, I almost see it as more likely, because then he's not going to get as much interest in free agency. Now, I don't expect JerMichael Finley to bomb. I will say that. I'm just saying, is it a hypothetical? I think he'll have a good season, or at least, you know, saying on par with he had last year. You know, he had 61 receptions for over 600 yards, set the franchise record for receptions by a tight end in a season. And of course, detractors will point out that, you know, even though it's a franchise record, which sounds really impressive, it was only the ninth, it was good for ninth best among tight ends in the NFL last year. Ninth, your franchise record is ninth best in one season. You know, so that's what detractors will say. You don't know what JerMichael Finley's future is in Green Bay, but he's going to be with them for 2013, at least to start out the year. If I had my guesses, he'll be with the Packers for the whole year. And so that's what it is. You know, that's what it's come down to with JerMichael Finley. He, of course, has been inconsistent in Green Bay. has, you know, kind of had his problems with the drops the past two seasons. He's very well known for his outspokenness, his inability to filter perhaps his thoughts before he speaks, thinks about the ramifications about what he's saying, or he doesn't think about ramifications. So, but he's back. He's back. Good or bad, JerMichael Finley is back in the Packers uniform for 2013. Like I said, they're not cutting him or trading him now. Well, at least until mid-season. And they're not going to cut him at mid-season. If anything, he'd be traded at mid-season. He's a candidate for it. We'll say that. Again, I realize in-season trades are not commonplace in the NFL. But if there's ever a person it could happen with, it might be JerMichael Finley. Just keep that in the back of your mind as the season approaches. Still a long way away yet. Still got to get through a lot of things. Yeah, still got to get through the month of March, not to mention the month of April and the NFL draft, and then on top of that, the off-season program, mini camp, OTAs, all those things, even training camp before we get to the season. We got a long way to go. That's good. We got a lot to talk about, too. Between now and then. So let's talk about something else here. Let's move on from JerMichael Finley. That happened on Monday. Let's talk about more recent developments that started to circulate Tuesday evening. I even remember it coming across my Twitter feed like during the evening hours, you know, not long before I was going to go to sleep. And Packers confirmed it yesterday. They have signed a kicker to compete with Mason Crosby. The kicker's name, Giorgio Tavecchio. And I'm sure I could add a nice Italian accent on that. I'm not gonna, though, because I'll butcher it. We'll have to get Jersey Al Bracco on here, an Italian himself, to pronounce it sometimes, maybe in his native tongue. But Giorgio Tavecchio was born in Italy. He's an Italian native, but moved to the United States at a fairly young age. I don't know the exact year he came over, but he spent at least his high school years, I know, in America, where he, you know, played football, also played soccer, as I understand, but played football, and ends up, you know, playing at the University of California, where he graduated not this past season, but the year before. 2011 was his last season in college football. He was actually our 7th-rated kicker in our Pro Football Draft preview guide last year, a 7th-rated kicker. So he, you know, he was on the radar, you know, but a lot of people probably never heard of him before. And he was signed by the San Francisco 49ers last year as an undrafted free agent. He spent training camp at the San Francisco 49ers. Ends up losing out to David Akers. Perhaps maybe the 49ers regret that a little bit. But, you know, what's interesting here, John asks on the live blog, is that really competition to Mason Crosby? Yeah, people are a little skeptical about Giorgio Tavecchio because he didn't have the greatest stats in college. Not that they were poor, really, but I mean, he probably had a field goal percentage, what, around 75%? And the most alarming thing is that he missed like 6 extra points. Now, without going back and watching the video, you do have to take that with a grain of salt. A lot of times, especially in college football, John says he heard it was 9 extra points. It could have been. Maybe it was 6 extra points in one season and then 9 over the course of his career or something like that. But a lot of times there's blocks in college football. You know, they're just not as good. You know, teams as a whole, special teams as a whole in college football as compared to the NFL, you know. a lot of times the blocking will just let guys through, so it won't even be the kicker's fault. Now, granted, you know, Randy says on the live blog, 9 extra points. True. I mean, I'm not saying all 9 of them were blocked, but there could be several that were not Tavecchio's fault at Cal. So, but it just, you know, keep that in mind. Now, what I will point out here as well, and it was a point brought to my attention, or at least that's, you know, what brought to the forefront of my mind, was a tweet by Bill Huber, a Packer report I remember seeing Tuesday night, pointing out that, think how, the NFC's Pro Bowl kicker this past season, remember who that was? The guy just across the border for the division rival over there, Blair Walsh, the rookie in Minnesota. Check out his college statistics from his senior year. Blair Walsh missed like 12 field goals his senior year in college. So you sit there and you're like, holy cow. He's like Blair Walsh. You wonder how he went from missing 12 field goals to being darn near the best kicker in the entire NFL last year. As a rookie, it really is impressive what Blair Walsh did. Evan says on the live blog, the lesson is kickers are a crapshoot. Sometimes they are. It is very tough to get a gauge on kickers. Just look at Mason Crosby. He goes from having the best year of his career in 2011 to the worst year of his career in 2012. In a span of 1 year, goes from the best to the worst. No middle ground there, at least in between. Mason Crosby was really an enigma this past year. You know, I get that a lot of his misses came from 50-plus yards, but it was just the nature of Mason Crosby's misses. So many of them were just like, not even close. Just like, are you really a kicker? That was the problem. That was the problem with Mason Crosby. So, basically, I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into this Giorgio Tavecchio signing because there is incredibly little risk for the Packers. Basically, what they've done is signed him to find out what he's made of. They have the entire offseason program, the entire training camp to find out about Tavecchio. They can find out if he's improved. They can find out his strengths and weaknesses. You know, NFL rosters are at 80 right now, folks. They can have 80 players on the roster. You know, there's no risk in taking a flyer on somebody at this time of year. You know, especially, it might be risky if you sign a free agent for several million dollars. That's risk. That's why Ted Thompson doesn't do it. Because there's a lot of risk involved. A guy like Giorgio Tavecchio, a street free agent, they're not giving up any comp picks for signing Giorgio Tavecchio either. There's no risk. He can come in. They can see what they got. Heck, they can cut him after 2 days in Green Bay and just be like, this guy stinks. It won't matter. He's not going to be a salary cap hit on them. You know, there's almost zero risk in doing this. It won't even prevent the Packers from potentially taking a kicker in the draft if they want. I'm not saying they will. It's an option open to the Packers. I could see it happening in the late rounds of the draft. Heck, when I did Mach 3, we talked a lot on Monday about our Mach 3 exercises or Mach 4. But in Mach 3, we ended up taking kicker Dustin Hopkins. For the Packers with the 6th-round pick. So, there you go. There's very little risk involved in this move. So don't get, don't look at Giorgio Tavecchio's stats and be like, all concerned and worried. I see comments on the section at Cheesehead TV, just, you know, when we announced the news, the Packers had reportedly signed Giorgio Tavecchio. You know, and a lot of people are probably joking, but they go and comment on the blog like, oh, yeah, this is the move that wins the Packers a Super Bowl. You know, I don't know if some people say that maybe sarcastically and it's a joke. And I think others actually feel that way, like, oh, yeah, great move, Ted Thompson. Way to sign some bum kicker off the street. Well, it's a kicker. Remember, Tim Mastay was a street free agent, essentially. He was signed to a futures contract by the Packers. You know, that's where you get your kickers and punters in the NFL. They're not these highly sought-after commodities. A couple are taken in the NFL draft every year, the really good ones. And you know, the others are, you know, found on the street. It does seem like once you make it in the NFL, once you make a 53-man roster, it seems like teams are really willing to take a chance on you then. It's like once you get your foot in the door, you've got it made as a kicker. Not in all cases, but like, you know, those guys seem to stick around. Once you make a 53-man roster, you're good. Somebody else is going to give you a chance, probably, at least, even if you're cut by your original team. You know, shows you, you know, just how long David Akers, you know, has been in the NFL. He just signed a free agent contract with, who did he sign with? You know, didn't the 49ers move on and get somebody new, and then Akers signed with somebody else? I forget. You know, I'm not paying terribly close attention to the coming and goings of kickers in free agency, but I remember seeing that in the news. Anyhow, I could see on our Twitter widget there the Packers mini camp was announced. So mark on your calendars, June 4th through 6th is when the Packers mandatory mini camp will be this year. The usually open to the public, at least they have been in the past under Mike McCarthy. So comment from Kevin Lamb on the live blog. I wonder how BJ Coleman is going to look this year. Wonder if he can challenge Harrell for the backup spot this year, or did the Pack keep three quarterbacks on the team? Interesting comment there. You know, I definitely think it's going to be the competition at quarterback, backup quarterback, obviously, will be opened up. You know, I don't think Graham Harrell has a roster spot, you know, made this year. The Packers are going to allow BJ Coleman to compete for the backup quarterback job. You know, they took him in the seventh round last year. They put him on the practice squad, kept him there all year long. They didn't need him. The Packers only kept two quarterbacks on the roster the whole year. They've occasionally kept three, but it's when injuries occurred. You know, you might remember in the Super Bowl season, Aaron Rodgers had that concussion there, and there's a little bit of a doubt there toward the end of the season, so they end up bringing, you know, at the time, Graham Harrell was the third quarterback, brought him up on the roster. This past year, they went with two quarterbacks the whole year. It all depends, you know. It depends how the draft shakes out, too. You know, there's nothing preventing the Packers from possibly drafting a quarterback this year. You know, it kind of depends about how they feel about B.J. Coleman, for one. You know, they've seen him for an entire year now. They kind of probably have a better idea, you know, a year in, what he's made out of, if he can be the guy or the backup, can be number two. Or, you know, heck, you know, they might take somebody in the NFL draft. I don't think it's likely they draft a quarterback, but, you know, they might. Mark in Madison says, if Harrell is the number two, I'm worried. They need to draft a quarterback in the later rounds. You know, I don't say they need to. It depends upon how confident they feel in B.J. Coleman. You know, I mean, if you draft a quarterback, what does that mean then? Does that mean you're going to keep him on the roster? You're going to make him the number three? You're going to put him on the practice squad this year? You know, there's some roster decisions that need to be made in regards to the quarterback position and how they back up Aaron Rodgers. I could see Sigmund Bloom checking in on the live blog. Hello, Sigmund. I guess maybe that's my cue here to give you a call. So let me do this here, folks. I'm gonna put up a little pause the video here, and you're gonna see something weird pop up on the screen, like this Packers Bears graphic. Don't be concerned. I'm gonna get Sigmund Bloom on the phone here, and we're gonna be right back. So hang with me here, folks. Welcome back to Railbird Central. Joining me right now on the phone, we have our guest on the line. We have Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com and bleacherreport.com. Any other titles for you, Sigmund?
No, just a football fanatic and always excited and happy to be on Cheesehead TV.
Well, thank you very kindly. We're glad to have you joining us. You know, kind of when I thought of having you on the show this year, we were just having a brief discussion on Twitter about Packers tight end JerMichael Finley and what his role in Green Bay might be and his future in Green Bay. And, you know, of course, we're getting ready for the NFL draft, and you got to wonder, with maybe 1 year left on his contract, that maybe the Packers go in a different direction sometime soon here at tight end. And could you maybe give us a brief overview of some of these top guys in the NFL draft at tight end, and then we'll get into them a little more specifically?
Yeah, and this is the class to do it. This is a great class, one of the better tight end classes in recent memory. You know, the Packers have been messing around in the late rounds with guys like Andrew Corliss and DJ Williams, and you know, kind of rolled snake eyes on those guys. So this might be years ago tight end in the first round. I think Tyler Eifert would be the guy if he's still there from Notre Dame. A big, long receiver, better blocker than advertised. Zach Ertz from Stanford is kind of like Eifert, more of a receiving tight end who is an adequate blocker, but on the rise, not as talented as Eifert. I really love Travis Kelce, Jason Kelce's brother, former quarterback. He's the guy with the highest ceiling, got big character questions. Also Gavin Escobar, who's more like JerMichael Finley, a pure receiver. I think not as good as Finley. And then even Jordan Reed, who's like Aaron Hernandez, who preceded him at Florida, more of a dynamic receiver than a slot, than a big, long receiver. And Vance McDonald around off the top six from Rice. Very underutilized, but kind of like Kelce, you see flashes of a lot more in the game.
Well, you know, let's start here a little bit with Tyler Eifert, because Notre Dame just had their pro day yesterday, of course, and Eifert worked out in front of scouts, and he's also considered the, I would say most people have him as the number one tight end. You know, what does he bring to the table? I know you kind of talked about it briefly, but, you know, give me a little more here on Tyler Eifert.
Sure, and he's a safe, ultra-safe prospect. You know, it's the kind of guy that you feel so good walking up to the podium and putting his name in as your number one pick. He's got a long frame. He's got great ball skills. He can high point the ball. He's aggressive. And there's also a guy who's much more athletic than it looks like on film. He's often matched up against the number one quarterback, not a safety, not a linebacker, a corner. So if he's not creating great separation, or he's just step for step with his guy, that's probably someone who's running in the 4.4s or 4.5s. So he is a very good athlete. As a blocker, look, he's not going to blast open holes. He's not going to be your best blocking tight end. But he's not a liability, and the arrow is pointing up there. He's a high character kid. He's been clutch for this team. He's really a kind of an offensive MVP for Notre Dame. So I think you know exactly what you're getting with Eifert. He's a mismatch maker. He does have that long frame to fill the same role that Finley does, but he can do a lot more than Finley. And I think you're going to get a lot more consistency than what you got from Finley. So if he's there at number 26, I will applaud the pick.
I remember you mentioning on Twitter that you don't think Zach Ertz is quite in the same neighborhood, though, as Tyler Eifert. You're not quite as sold on him. Why is that?
He's a similar player. I think that you just see he's not quite as athletic as Eifert. He's not as fast as Eifert. He's like Eifert, you can trust him to always do his job. He's a reliable player. He's got good hands. Maybe even a little more rugged than Eifert over the middle of the field, but he doesn't have the speed that Eifert has. He doesn't have quite the length or the athleticism to maximize that catch radius. That's what you see with Eifert, is that catch radius is just massive, just like for Michael Finley. So you see Ertz as someone who looks like a very solid NFL starting tight end. Is he going to make plus plays? Is he going to give you advantages, mismatches to exploit? That's where I can't say that he will. He might be, let's say, a middle-class Steve Miller, where Tyler Eifert, you know, you see some elements of his game where he can really create a mismatch that is a big part of your passing game plan.
We've been talking a lot about the passing game. Now part of the job for these guys is to block. And I don't think that's the forte with either Eifert or Ertz.
Right.
But, you know, what are these guys going to bring to the blocking game?
Sure. They're both try-hard guys. And they're both guys that do their assignment. But they're probably wall-off blockers. I mean, you see some effort in there where maybe they'll find somebody at the second level. And they can neutralize or stalemate their opponent. And you see some fire in Eifert. I think Eifert's arrow points up a little bit more than Ertz. But look, when you're a 6'6", 250 guy, you don't have the body type to match up against some of these defensive ends, even some of the outside linebackers. It's just a power mismatch. So a stalemate or neutralizing your guy is really not a bad result. But if you watch Travis Kelce, on the other hand, what I would say is athletically equal to Eifert or Ertz, or maybe superior, he relishes blocking. He loves the clash. He gets after his guy. He hits with a jolt. He puts his guy on the ground. You know, he blocks to the whistle. He's the kind of guy that you can have as a personal protector for a quarterback on a rollout. You just have that one blocker between him and the defense. Kelce looks like a potentially dominant blocker. Where Eifert and Ertz, like I said, your best result with them when they're blocking is a stalemate blocker.
Is Kelce your number three guy then?
I have him as my number two guy.
Okay.
And I think that here's the thing about Kelce, okay? If you watch Kelce, you know, he was a leading receiver for Cincinnati this year. He's a great blocker. He's got surprising speed. He can make moves in the open field. He's a powerful runner in the open field. He is the one with that Rob Gronkowski element to his game. Now, Rob Gronkowski is obviously a name that he's not Rob Gronkowski. He has a very similar style of game, you know, physicality to his game, great athlete, kind of take no prisoners approach. The big question on Kelce is that he was suspended for a year for something he did the week of the bowl game a few years ago. And I think it was the incident happened in 2010, and he was suspended for the 2010 season, early 2010, and then suspended later. Nobody knows or will say what it was. Obviously, if you're suspended for a year, it was something. But here's, you know, something not just like jaywalking, you know.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Even Pro Football Weekly put some stuff out there, you know, oh, he's a terrible character kid, you know, a big red flag. It might drop him all the way to the third round. Wait a second. If he's a third-round pick because of this terrible character, what does that mean he is without the character? He's a first-round pick or an early second-round pick. So if you're just trying to be ominous about his character and say, I might not even take him until the third round because of his character, you're telling me that he is a potentially elite prospect.
Very fair. All right. I saw a couple of breakdowns you did at Bleacher Report on a couple of these hybrid defensive end outside linebacker guys, one of them being Cornelius Tank Carradine of Florida State. And you know, I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing this right. Is it Corey Lemonnier of
Lemonnier.
Auburn? Let's talk about these two guys a little bit.
Yeah. And it's funny because Lemonnier, or it was Lemonnier for the whole time he was at Auburn. I think it was Rich Eisen at the combine. I said, no, it's Lemonnier. So it could be Lemonnier.
Okay.
But either way, we'll call him Lemon. I'll start with Corey Lemonnier because I probably won't gush and be as flowery and poetic in my description of him as I would Carradine. Lemonnier is a very solid player. Now, I don't know that he's a good fit at outside linebacker because he doesn't run well. He doesn't move well in space. He's a very aware player, but you'll see him miss plays that he diagnoses because he's just not quite quick enough or fast enough to get to the spot, even though he recognizes the play. As a pass rusher, he's not a quick twitch speed rusher, but he can bend the corner and he can get around a slower offensive tackle. And you also see a ton of effort, a great motor. He'll create plays with hustle. He'll clean up the mess. You got to remember he was on a terrible, terrible Auburn team this year, and really leading by example with effort. He is someone that I see more as a defensive end. He was 6'3", 255 at the combine. I think that's big enough to play defensive end. That's bigger than Shane McClellan was last year. I like him better as a defensive end fit. He's more of a power effort player than an athleticism, speed, quick twitch player. Mm-hmm. And he's a smart, aware player. But he's your secondary pass rusher. He's not your number one pass rusher that creates all the havoc that the other guys clean up. He's one of the guys that cleans up the havoc. Now, take Carradine. And Brian, you might have to do the Oscar Awards playoff music if I start going on too long here about Carradine. Because I do think that he's the kind of player that people need to familiarize themselves if the name is not familiar. He was an elite, a five-star prospect, had to go to junior college, did a little bit last year, and then came on this past year. He was the number three defensive end for Florida State entering the season. Everyone knows Bjorn Werner. I think Carradine, as long as the knee checks out, should go ahead of Werner. And then Brandon Jenkins, who's also in this draft, mm-hmm. Also had medical questions. He was the star at the beginning of the year. He goes down, and Carradine gets in. Carradine is the best natural pass rusher in this draft. There's no question in my mind.
Interesting.
Watching him on tape. He's a power-to-speed rusher. He has a sprinter's sprint up the field to get around and bend the corner. He also can bull rush this guy. And he just plays with a lot of edge and killer instinct. What you see from him as a pass rusher is he's a mismatch for slower offensive tackles. They have no chance. He has that great killer instinct that when he's in range of a quarterback, he uncoils like a viper. He always has his man going backwards. Now, in the open field, unlike Lemonnier, he moves like a linebacker. And you got to keep in mind, he's 6'4", 276. He moves like a linebacker. I've seen him on some plays mirror an option running play where he can follow the quarterback, and when the fish comes, he can follow the running back. I've seen him also, again, for a running plays, just jolt his guy back into the backfield, like a power player. As a linebacker in space, he tackles like a linebacker. He has form tackling. He drives through, sticks his guy. He hits with a thud. You watch him, the quarterback from Virginia Tech, Logan Thomas, who's Cam Newton size. He brings him down like a regular-sized quarterback. And smaller quarterbacks, he stuns them when he hits them. He has some moves, one move where he slaps the outside shoulder of the offensive tackle to get that gap on the outside to turn the corner. That they really seem powerless to stop if he gets his hands on them. So you see some advanced play there, despite the fact that he only has a year of big-time college football experience. So I see the ceiling for him as easily the best pass rusher in this draft. Can play 4-3 or 3-4. And he's a player that's just scratching the surface of his potential. He tore his ACL in November. He's supposed to work out about a week before the draft. Does he plan to do everything? If he does, look for him to go in the top 10 or 15.
Interesting. You've got me a little bit excited about Tank Carradine, and I didn't think he would be that high, but, makes sense to me. Makes sense to me. Now, with both these guys, you think they can play in a 3-4 defense, obviously, as we, are Packer fans here. And,
right.
And can they make the conversion?
Right. Well, and obviously from the Packers' perspective, what's leaning behind here is this all is McPerry. And, where they're at within their evaluation of Nick Perry. But there are some other guys, if they choose not to go that position in the first round, someone like Jamie Collins from Southern Mississippi, he may not be there. He may not be there at the end of the second round. But he is a guy who looks like he can definitely make that conversion. Some people have Chase Thomas from Stanford making that conversion. And as I thought about number one and number two pass rushers, Clay Matthews, you don't need a dynamic pass rusher. You need a more of a, it's kind of like DeMarcus Ware and Anthony Spencer in Dallas, you know? So even though Chase Thomas isn't a dynamic athlete, he could be somebody that fits. You know, Darvis Jones is an interesting guy to project as a 3-4 linebacker. And then you look at the defensive end guys. A lot of these guys aren't going to be in play for Green Bay, but Deion Jordan, Arcadius Mingo. DeMontre Moore is an interesting name to bring up if they're looking 3-4 outside. That would be weird to go 3-4 outside linebacker back-to-back draft, but if they kind of felt like, Nick Carey, the conversion's not going to work, DeMontre Moore may still be there for them. So unlike last year, where I think they kind of had to reach a little bit for Perry, maybe not reach, but I just think that, you know, he wasn't an ideal convert to be more outside linebacker. There are some players that I think will make a more seamless transition in this draft.
Very good. Sigmund, thank you so much for talking to us here this morning. We appreciate it every time you come on. You have some great knowledge of these prospects here in the NFL draft, and thanks a lot.
Yeah, anytime. You know, and this is always fun. This is, you know, the home of Aaron Nagler, so, you know, I feel like I should, like, sign the wall or something.
Well, we'll have to tell him that. But thanks a lot, Sigmund, and take care, and we'll touch base again sometime soon.
Anytime, Brian.
All right, take care. Sigmund Bloom of footballguys.com, of bleacherreport.com, joining us here on the show this morning. And that's basically going to do it, folks, as we wrap up an episode here of Rail Bird Central on a Wednesday morning. We'll be back once again on Friday, so make sure to tune in then. I'm working on a guest, so we'll see. But for the time being, no matter who's here, make sure to join us Friday. On behalf of Jamie Jors, I'm Brian Caribou. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. I leave you today with a song called Can't Wait Another Day by String Cheese Incident on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go, Pack. Go.
Every night I pace the hall, just waiting for your call, anticipating your next move, it's got me bouncing off the wall.